Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ Positive Talk Radio in Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is making decisions. Each of my guests will be discussing tough decisions we make in our work and personal lives. My first guest studies the link between psychology and economics, offering startling insights into modern life. He's the first to write that infinite choice is paralyzing to the human psyche. Now he's turned his attention to wisdom. We're going to discuss his latest book, Practical Wisdom. My second guest is the CNBC business news reporter based right here in Los Angeles, where she covers retail, agriculture, defense, as well as reports on the California economy. We're going to discuss the latest news from Apple Incorporated, including Steve Jobs' recent health announcement and the company's quarterly earnings. My third guest is has price on his head, and he thinks that you have a price on your head, and I have a price on my head. In fact, he believes that everything has a price associated with it. We'll discuss his latest book, The Price of Everything, Solving the Mystery of Why We Pay What We Do. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Barry Schwartz, is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Paradox of Choice, Why More is Less. And it's one of the most influential works on social and business analysis in the past few years. Barry is a frequent lecturer at leading business and idea conferences around the world, including the TED Conference, where I first heard him speak, and he originated this idea for his latest book. He is the Dorman Cartwright Professor of Social Theory and Social Action at Swarthmore College, specializing in psychology and economics. His latest book is titled Practical Wisdom, The Right Way to Do the Right Thing. Welcome to the show, Barry Schwartz. How are you today?
I'm fine. It's great to be on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the guest because I do enjoy interviewing thought leaders, and you are clearly a thought leader with all of your writing. So your latest book is titled Practical Wisdom, The Right Way to Do the Right Thing. So help my listeners to understand, define for us, what is practical wisdom?
So the term practical wisdom comes from the distinguished ancient philosopher Aristotle. And as he asked himself, how do people live moral lives, the conclusion that he came to is that you don't lead a moral life by following rules. And the reason is that life is too complicated. There aren't any rules that actually tell you what the right thing to do is. And instead, you rely on judgment to figure out the right way to do the right thing at the right time. And that was what he called practical wisdom. And so, you know, to make it less abstract, as a parent, for example, we learn often the hard way that each child is different, and for a given child needs something different at different stages of life, and we have this delicate decision to make over and over again about what does this child need now and how can I provide it. It takes wisdom to make that decision, and that's what the book's about.
All right, and I think that is a very good example. It helps to solidify it. Most of my listeners are parents themselves, so they understand exactly what you're talking about. What interested me and piqued my interest in the book was the example is a little more abstract about the judge who was presiding over a case of Michael in Pennsylvania, and he was up for armed robbery. Tell us that example and relate to us how that really shows the practical wisdom.
Absolutely. So the judge's name is Lois Forer, And Michael robbed a cab driver with a gun and got $50. There, he was caught, he was arrested, he pled guilty. There was no issue about his guilt. And Judge Forer was faced with a decision about what sentence to give him. So there is a mandatory sentence of 5 years for armed robbery in a public conveyance. And that certainly seemed to describe Michael. But, Forer reasoned, it was a toy gun, not a real gun. Michael had no criminal history. Michael was a devoted husband and father who was thoughtful enough about those responsibilities that he was paying for his child to go to parochial school. And she thought, Judge Forer, that putting him away for 5 years would serve absolutely no purpose and would almost certainly wreck a family. And so she crafted a novel sentence. She sentenced him to a year, and it was a year in prison, except that he left prison every day to go to work. And then at the end of the day, he came back to prison. He served out his time. He made restitution to the cab driver. He went out into the world, got his job. The family stayed together, and it looked like a triumph of wise judgment by a judge. But the reason we tell this story, my co-author Kenneth Sharp and I, is that the prosecutor on the case was very unsettled by the judge's refusal to issue a mandatory sentence, and he appealed the sentence. And 2 years later, 2 years after Michael had been released, the Supreme Court decided that Michael should, in fact, go back to prison for another 4 years. And the result of that was that Judge Forer, appalled, resigned from the bench, and Michael disappeared. And so this story captures both what wisdom is and what wise people do when they're using it and making good decisions, and how there are these influences in modern society that are depriving people of the opportunity to use wise judgment.
And that is one of your central theses, that we have to live with so many rules and regulation in our expanded society that it really is limiting the amount of judgment that people can apply, the practical wisdom, as you call it, that people can apply. So I want to go back to the basic foundation of your book. It's based on Aristotle. And let's face it, Aristotle, a couple thousand years ago, was living in a far simpler time than we are today. So how, you know, he couldn't have imagined the complexity we have in our world. So how can his teachings, how can his philosophy of a kinder, simpler time really apply to the hectic world in which we live today?
Well, it was a simpler time, to be sure. I'm not sure it was a kinder time, since in his time there were slaves. And Aristotle really was writing not about all people. He was only writing about the people who in his society counted as people. But it was certainly a simpler time, and you raise a very good point. Why should we have any confidence that what made sense in Aristotle's time makes sense now? And our sense, actually, is that the ever-growing complexity and diversity of modern life makes the need for wisdom even more important. If you can't make rules to tell a homogeneous group of people what to do, how on earth can you make rules to tell a completely heterogeneous, unbelievably diverse group of people what to do? What you need in modern society, even more than in his own, is you need rules to set guidelines, and then wise people using their judgment to figure out when those rules should be applied, when the rules should be bent, how the rules should be applied. And all of that requires people who both have the skill to make these judgments and, most importantly, have the will to do the right thing by the people they serve. That's really crucial. If you don't want to do the right thing, the only way to get you to do the right thing is to make you follow some set of rules. And society has kind of assumed that nobody wants to do the right thing anymore because it's the right thing. And so you have to nudge people and push people and incentivize people. And we think that that's really a mistaken turn that society has taken.
All right, we're talking to Barry Schwartz, everybody. His latest book is titled Practical Wisdom, The Right Way to Do the Right Thing. And I understand what you're saying, Barry, and reading your book, I got your central thesis that you just talked about. The simple set of guidelines produce better results than detailed rules and regulations. However, the simple guidelines and being able to use practical wisdom carries a cost with it. In our overly litigious society, Doesn't that open up practitioners of practical wisdom to second guessing or worse still, lawsuits? And let's go back to your example of Michael in Pennsylvania. The judge who signed that practical solution of having him incarcerated and yet able to go to work each day, she eventually resigned the bench as a result of the Supreme Court overturning her decision. So in this overly litigious society, can we truly practice practical wisdom?
Well, this again is an extremely good point, and I think what it suggests is that people in modern society need another one of the virtues that Aristotle wrote about, namely courage. It is risky to use your judgment. If you follow a rule and it doesn't work out, you can always blame the rule. The devil made me do it. The rule made me do it. My supervisor made me do it. If you use your judgment, you're sticking your neck out. Now, much of the time, if you're wise, your judgment will produce a better result than following the rule, whatever the rule is. But if that doesn't happen, everybody starts looking in your direction, and you can suffer all kinds of consequences, lawsuits, losing your job, and stuff like that. So it takes courage to both formulate a judgment about what's needed and then act on it and be willing to accept the consequences. You're right.
All right. We're talking to Barry Schwartz. And Barry, I want to follow on with that line of reasoning just one more step if I can, please. Rules-based logic and decisions that are made by rules are, in some cases, better than human decisions. Look at Deep Blue, the IBM computer that has beaten a human being, a human opponent, in chess. Rules-based medicine, where that could help relieve some of the stress that we have in our medical system today by allowing many rules-based decisions to be made by nurse practitioners, orderlies, other people other than doctors. So talk to me, in a world of increasing complexity, what's the balance between the need for rules-based decisions and applying practical wisdom?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Deep Blue, because Deep Blue is rules-based, but not rule-governed. The best computer chess players are computer programs that learn how to play chess. You don't simply put a bunch of rules into the computer. You put a few rules into the computer, and then you have it get smarter and smarter by making moves, looking at what the consequences are, and adjusting its strategy. And so there's a sense in which Deep Blue is learning to play chess in the same way that human beings do, but, of course, learning it faster and better because of its incredible computing power. And, no one has been able to formulate the rules that govern expert chess play. And chess players themselves can't tell you the rules. What they learn how to do is recognize incredibly complex patterns. They learn how to do this by experience, by trial and error, by feedback. And if you like, the way we talk about it in the book is that what happens is that this incredible neural machinery that we've all got becomes a smart, wise network of neural interconnections. And you can't produce as good results by putting the rules into the brain as you get if the brain develops itself on the basis of feedback. So I think actually Deep Blue is a good example of our point about the limits of rules. In the case of medicine, there are certain things where rules are the way to go. Atul Gawande wrote a book about this, about checklists. You know,
yes.
You don't want hospital-produced infections. So that means you need to make sure that the doctors and the nurses wash their damn hands. Well, having everyone go through a checklist to make sure that everything is sterile, it makes perfectly good sense. No judgment is required. There's never a situation where it's like, should I wash my hands before seeing this patient or shouldn't I? The answer to that question is always yes, wash your hands. There are other aspects of medicine where the rules aren't adequate. You know, how do you talk to a patient who's obese and diabetic to get that person to change diet, get some exercise, and lose some weight? You know the right thing to do, but the question is, what can you tell this particular person that the person will actually be able to do given the life the person is living? There are limits to what people are able to do to change their lives. That requires judgment.
And that's exactly the type of thing we're going to discuss with our third guest, Eduardo Porter, and with his book, The Price of Everything. Well, so we'll come to that later, Barry. You want to stay tuned for that. But I like what you're having to say. Let's apply what you're saying about rules-based and unintended consequences to some real-world examples, if you will, and relate it to your thesis to the mortgage lending crisis of 2000 to 2007.
Well, that was certainly a case of the abandonment of rules with disastrous consequences, at least in my judgment. There were lots of rules that regulated the way bankers did their work. And in this enthusiastic embrace of free markets and competition, those rules got eroded or eliminated. And the result, catching almost everybody by surprise, was a complete economic calamity. And the first response to that from the financial community and the government was to reintroduce rules, and we're about, all of us, to see what those rules actually look like and how they play out. So this looks, if you like, as a, like a counterexample to what we're arguing in the book. You need rules to control the bankers. But our argument is that part of the reason you need rules is that what it means to be a banker has been so transformed in the last couple of generations, that nowadays bankers work only for themselves. They aren't interested in serving clients. They aren't interested in serving the public. They aren't interested in serving communities. All they're interested in doing is maximizing return on investment. And when you have people with that aim in their activities, only rules will restrain them. But that's not the way banking always was. It's not the way banking has to be. And there exist even now banks where the aim is to serve the community, to make good loans, to help people continue to pay their loans, to keep the loans instead of selling them. So we have alternative models, and those banks didn't go under, and nor did they upset the entire national economy.
Very well said. We've been talking to Barry Schwartz, everybody, the author of the book Practical Wisdom, The Right Way to Do the Right Things. He's talking about a return back to less rules, less enforcement, better decisions with people making, having the courage to use their judgment. Barry, thanks so much for being our guest. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Well, I mean, they can type my name into Google and go to my homepage. I don't remember what its URL is. And they can check out the book on Amazon.
That's great. Or they can buy it here at Bank of Books in Ventura, our locally owned bookstore as well. Barry, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
Wonderful talking to you, Bill.
It was a pleasure talking to you as well.